Good morning. We'll begin in John chapter 12, if you'd like to turn in there. John chapter 12. Appreciate Todd's comments in the prayer. I hope that what I say will be truthful, number one. Number two, I hope it will be said in a way that will be understandable, that we can all get something from the thoughts we have this morning. I'd like to begin by reviewing the chapter contents of chapters 13 through 17 very briefly. Then we'll look at just two specific points, that lessons that we can learn from these chapters, and then we'll have some closing thoughts after that. Chapter 12 is the end of John's record of Jesus' public ministry. So the time in chapter 12 is the last week. This is the week of ultimately ending his crucifixion. This is the chapter we have in this here, the verse 12, the triumphant entry. And probably on Sunday of that week. Verse 37, we find many of the Jews, even at this point in his life, still don't believe in him. But with his public ministry ended, Jesus now turns his attention in 13 through 17 to this close group, to the 12, to his apostles. So John spends 12 chapters, 1 through 12, covering Jesus' life and his work. And now he's got these five, I call them super rich chapters, my favorite chapters, where he talks about the very last words that he will have to say to his apostles before his death. Chapter 13, they eat the Passover feast. Jesus washes their feet. Judas is pointed out as the one who would betray him. Satan had already entered his heart. Jesus told him to go do this deed quickly. And he also tells him in chapter 13 he's going away. They can't come. So in chapter 14, they're still in the upper room. They eat the feast. Jesus offers them some comforting words. In fact, he's going away to leave them. He tries to comfort them. And that's one theme he kind of covers through this whole section, is this fact, I'm leaving you and you can't come. We'll talk about that more a little later. One of the seven I ams of John, it's in chapter 14, verse 6. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Then there's more instruction, more encouraging words. At the end of chapter 14, in verse 31, they leave the place where they ate the supper. So now chapters 15, well, go over to chapter 18, this is in your mind. 18, verse 1, they cross the Kidron Brook and go into the garden. So if they leave the upper room in chapter 14 and enter the garden in chapter 18, seems chapters 15, 16, and 17 then are spoken as they are leaving the city and going to the place of the garden where the betrayal will take place in just a matter of a few hours. Chapter 15 begins with another one of the I ams. I am the vine, the true vine. My Father is the vine dresser. Verse 5, I am the vine and you are the branches. Chapter 16, they get the promise of the Helper, the Holy Spirit, along with more assurance about his departure. Chapter 17 is the prayer chapter, the prayer for himself, for these apostles, for all who would believe on him through their words. That's us. Then chapter 18, as I said, they arrive at the garden. He's now ready to give his life to complete his mission. No one would take it from him, he had said. I will give it willingly. Not that he wanted to go through all the flogging and the embarrassment and the humiliation of the crucifixion. He was going to yield to his Father's will. So as I said, John devotes much of his gospel to these last few hours. And they're so rich in getting, as Jesus is getting his last words in before his death, to the 12. Actually, it's 11. Because by this time, Jesus is gone. So I want to pick just two points out of many that can be chosen from these chapters and talk about them for just a few minutes. Two points that Jesus seems to really emphasize to these apostles. Two points that I think we would say we agree with, that we practice. Yeah, two things that I wonder sometimes if maybe at times we give lip service to or practice on a limited basis when Jesus talks about them without limitation. That little mirror sitting up here, by the way. So as we discuss these points this morning, I see me. Just be aware of that. First point is in John chapter 13. Turn there, John 13, verse 34. But Jesus says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that you love one another, by this we'll all know that you are my disciples, if you have one love one for another. First notice, this is a commandment. The last few words of that first song that Tim led, it talks about being a blessed commandment. This is a commandment. It says, a new commandment I give to you. The commandment is not new in the fact of talking about love being new, but it is new in the way Jesus is using it here. Jesus is talking about a special love. In First John chapter 3, verse 16, that one verse here is on the screen. Same apostle John writes, by this we know love because he laid down his life for us. That's the example Jesus gave of love. He laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. This morning, three or four times, I'm going to reference commentaries, either Albert Barnes or Adam Clark or somebody. Because sometimes these commentators, I think, can express a point in words that are beyond my ability. Barnes, in writing on this love they were to have one for another, said this was to surmount, it was to triumph over all distinctions of country, of color, of rank, of office, of sect. They were to feel they were on a level. They had common wants. They were redeemed by the same sacred blood. They were going to the same heaven. They were to befriend each other in trials, to be careful of each other's feelings and reputation, to deny themselves, to promote the other's welfare. This command or law was new regarding the extent to which his love is to be carried. Because Christ immediately adds, as I have loved you. As I have loved you, you love one another. His love for them was strong. It was continuing. It was unremitting. He's about to show that love to them in his death. It's the same section of John. Flip over to chapter 15. 15 verses 13 and 14. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. Then he adds, you are my friends if you do what I command you. So how do we love one another? What manner? As I have loved you. How much do we love one another? As I have loved you. I gave my life for you. What are the reasons? Why? Why do we love one another? Well, first, there's the good that will come from the fact that you caring about or helping or assisting or laughing with or crying with or putting yourself in the place of a brother. Good for you and good for them. But more than this, more than just by this love, its related actions toward one another, all, that's the word Jesus used, all will know that you are my disciples. It's a proclamation. There's something being said. There's something being shown to the world. By this love, we are to have and exhibit one for the other. We belong to him. It seems to me the backside of this would be, if his love is missing, if it's not displayed, I don't mean shown, put it for show, but if it's not displayed, there's no indication that we're truly his disciples. So like I said, I would ask the question, are we truly his disciples if we don't have this love one for another? Clark writes his commentary on John 13, verse 35. And this phrase, by this shall all men know. He says, from this time forward, this mutual disinterested love, that is, love that's not influenced by my considerations of myself or any personal gain, This love should become the essential and distinctive mark of all my disciples. They love one another with pure hearts fervently, even unto death. Then it shall fully appear they are disciples of that person who laid down his life for his sheep, who became by dying a ransom for all. So 2 points. One, love is a commandment. We've already talked about that. But now notice how Jesus takes what they would be familiar with and used to, the master-servant or the teacher-student relationship, and he calls it a friend relationship. Chapter 15, verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends. If you do whatever I command you, you're my friends. In James chapter 2, Abraham is called the friend of God. Wow. How would it be if on your tombstone, sometime during the middle of the night, a finger went up there and just wrote, my friend, across there. Jesus says that we're his friends if we do his commandments, including this one, to love as I have loved you. Look at the Clark again. And Clark's going to reference in this little thing I'm going to read here, Jerome. Jerome was an early church historian. He translated the Bible into Latin and wrote commentaries on the Gospels and whatever. But listen to what he says about John. That's John that wrote this epistle. So deeply was this commandment engraved in the heart of this evangelist that Jerome says in his extreme old age, when he used to be carried to the public assemblies of the believers, his constant saying was, little children, love one another. His disciples wearied at last with the constant repetition of these same words, ask him why. Why he constantly said the same thing? Because, he said, it's the commandment of the Lord, and the observation of it alone is sufficient. John himself says in 1 John chapter 5, by this we know that we love the children of God, and we love God and keep his commandments. If each one of us properly applies this command that our Savior gave us to love one another as I have loved you, there'd be no need to preach on gossip or backbiting or evil will, envy, ill will, envy, gossip, any of those things. Why? Because they'll all be gone. They'll be there. Love like Christ loved us, and all these things will disappear. Peter puts it this way, 1 Peter 1:22. Since you have purified your souls and obeyed the truth of the Spirit, in sincere love for the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. So, love one another as I have loved you. For our second point, let's go to the beginning of chapter 13, that familiar passage about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. So John chapter 13, verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, they should depart from this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil having already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing the Father had given all things into his hands, that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from the supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and wiped them with the towel with which he was girded. Jesus had arranged a place for his apostles to eat the Passover supper. Here in this passage, we're reminded of his great love for them, the same love that sets the standard for the love we just talked about. We have one for another. Judas has already arranged with the chief priests to betray Jesus. Satan's in his heart. But while Judas is present, Jesus begins washing the disciples' feet, apparently including Judas' feet, the one who would betray him just in a matter of hours. Washing feet was a common practice back then. They walked with sandals on dirty, dusty roads. It would be the task of the servant. The servant of the host would wash the feet of his guest. But here Jesus, their master, gets up and proceeds to wash their feet. I wonder what they were thinking. Well, Peter tells us a little bit of it in chapter 13, verse 6. Then he came to Simon Peter, ready to wash his feet. Peter said to him, "Lord, are you washing my feet?" And in reading about this verse, all the commentators say that these words, every one of them, are emphatic. Lord, the Son of God, the Messiah, you are washing my feet? Peter knew this was not normal. So after some discussion, Jesus gets down to the point of his exercise in verse 12. So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, "Do you know what I've done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought also to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. If I, your master, can humble myself, get down on my knees, and wash your feet, something unheard of, then you ought to wash one another's feet. Do as I have done to you." To put it in plain language, if I, your master, am not too good to do this, what makes you think any one of you is too good or too mighty to wash the feet of anyone else in this room? Jesus doesn't say this is optional. It's not a choose to do this if you wish type example. No, it's that you should do as I have done to you. No excuses. No questions. But Jesus does offer a positive incentive. Look down at verse 17. "If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." Blessed is happy. Think about the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. If you know these things, and they did, and we do, then blessed or happy are you and we if you do them. Any of us really want to be unhappy? Why? James uses this word blessed. In James 1, verse 25, he says, "But he looks to the perfect law of liberty and continues in it. It's not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does." Doer, blessed. So let's take a very short tangent for just a minute and think about being a doer of the work. You've probably seen this list before. Hebrews chapter 11 is a chapter on faith. Let me read you just a few things from it. Abel offered, notice the action words. Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice. Enoch pleased God. Noah prepared an ark. Abraham obeyed when he was sent to a new land. Sarah bore a son and judged him faithful who had promised. Abraham offered up Isaac. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob blessed the sons of Joseph and worshiped leaning on his staff. Moses was hidden by his parents. Moses chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. Moses forsook Egypt. Moses kept the Passover, passed through the Red Sea. Joshua circled the walls of Jericho for 7 days. Rahab hid the spies. And that may not be all of them. Each one starting with the words, by faith. But listen to the action, the doing. Matthew chapter 25, that chapter we look at for the judgment scene, the sheep and the goat. Jesus talking to those who are on his right, explaining to them why they've been welcomed in. He says, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. In prison you came to me." We will never be truly happy just to know these things without putting them into practice in our life. True happiness comes from following the application of what we know is true and right, not just from knowing it. But back to our foot washing for a minute. We're not talking about some little foot washing, although it might be needed at some time. Jesus is making a point about humility and service. Remember, these are the apostles who had asked, "Can I set one on your left hand and one on your right? Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom?" So what's he showing them? Showing them humility. They need to serve one another. Get down on your knees and wash the feet. James chapter 4, 2 verses, verse 6, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. 1 Peter 5, verse 5. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. And yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Whatever we can find to do for anyone in this assembly, or those who couldn't make it here this morning, whatever we can find to do for someone else, no matter how lowly it is, we need to humble ourselves, get down on our knees, and do it. The two reasons we do it is because Jesus said, follow my example by doing it to one another. And secondly, because of the love for my family, my brethren, based on the love that Jesus demonstrated for me by giving his life so that I ought to do for you, my friends. But there may be more than just physical service. That's what I've had in mind at this point, is thinking about physical service I could do for someone else. Think a minute about spiritual service for someone. Someone who needs encouragement or needs strengthening in the faith, maybe one-on-one. Care for the person across the building and their physical needs? Absolutely. But don't forget, what service can you be to someone who has spiritual needs? Don't be too proud of your knowledge versus theirs, or your ability to teach versus theirs, or of your, my notes say, XXX, whatever. Humbly and meekly seek out someone who needs your spiritual service to build them up, to encourage them, to get through a tough time, and go to them and say, how can I help you spiritually? I began by saying that we know both of these points, love and service, and we do. But I think sometimes we give them superficial lip service. You say, oh, no, no, no. I'm always busy doing for this one or for this one. And many of you are. But I'd like to remind you of another one. You say, oh, I don't know him very well. I don't have a very close personal relationship with that person. My point exactly. I need to get out of our comfort zone, out of our safety group, and get to know and love and serve and do for that brother or sister that I don't know very well. I personally haven't felt very comfortable being around, and go to them and find out how I can help. Jesus didn't say, now, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, I know you're fishermen. You spent a lot of time together on the Sea of Galilee. You know each other real well. You look out for each other. You serve and love each other. Now, you don't have much association with Matthew, that tax collector, I understand. You don't have much to do with Simon, the zealot. I understand that, but that's okay. But doesn't that sound a lot like us? We love and serve in our comfortable group. I don't think we can expect to be blessed, not the way Jesus really wants to bless us, to be break out, reach across the aisles to others. Did you and I just sing these words? Make me a servant, just like your son. Lord, make me one. And I'm not forgetting the mirror. I'm sitting right here. So I hope we will all resolve to love one another like Jesus loved, to serve one another as Jesus gave us the example. On the last night of our meeting, David suggested an exercise. Hope you tried it. He just suggested we take our directory. We pray for every other member here at Eastside. It will be fast. Take some time. It will wake you up to those you don't know. Maybe to those who have physical problems, to those who are struggling spiritually. It will help you remember someone who did something good for you sometime in the past. It might remind you of a person that you might be able to help. I would really encourage you to try it. I think the results will truly surprise you as you work to love maybe someone you hadn't thought about, like Jesus loved, and serve like the example Jesus gave us. One other quick observation in this chapter as we close. Several times in these chapters, Jesus references his leaving them. It's almost like a theme that runs through these chapters. He talks about he's going to leave them. He wants them to fully comprehend that. He's trying to offer them words of encouragement. He says, I'm going away. You can't come. I'm going to send the helper. I'm going to prepare a place for you. I'm going to come back and get you. You can be with me. Listen to some verses. After telling them in chapter 13 he was leaving them and they can't come, he opens chapter 14 with, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. I encourage you with that. I'm leaving, yes, but I'm going to prepare a place for you. I'm coming back to get you. Down in chapter 14, and verse 25. These things I have spoken to you while I'm present with you. Verse 27. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give it. Let not your heart be troubled. Let it be afraid. You've heard me say, I'm going away, and I'm coming back to you. He told them he was leaving. They couldn't come. He reassures them over and over. He's preparing a place. He'll come back and get them. They have a difficult time understanding. Chapter 16, he mentions this again. Chapter 16, verse 5. But now I go away to him who sent me. And none of you ask, where are you going? Because I've said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It's to your advantage that I go away. Verse 20. For surely I say to you, I will weep, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. And you'll be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. I think we can take these same points that's on the screen now and some slight modifications and apply them to us. He's gone back to the Father. We can't go, at least not while we're on this earth. He sent a helper. The same Spirit who came to help them helps us through the written word. John 14, verse 26. The Spirit had two things he would do for the apostles. Bring to remembrance that what Jesus taught them. We have the written gospels. And teach them all things. And we have the writings of the other inspired writers. They prepare a place for us. They return to get us. And we can be with him. The first time Jesus came to the world, he came to save it. John 12, 47. When he comes again, he's coming to judge it. Acts 17, 31. If we accept the salvation he offers, we have no reason to fear the judgment. So this morning, 3 points. And the second line on the screen is important. Love one another as I have loved you. Serve one another as I gave you example. And be encouraged. You can be with me. Jesus prepared a place, not just for those 12 or 11. He's prepared a place for all of us. All of us. He's going to come back again. It's going to be a judgment. And if we're ready, we can be with him. That's his promise. We can be with him for all through eternity. And that mansion he's gone to prepare for us. How about you this morning? Are you ready to meet that judgment? Are you ready to stand there before God, one-on-one, you and Him, and face what you've done this life? His grace, His mercy is there. He demands obedience from us. We can help you this morning. Come to the front as we stand and sing.